Then I will hand over to Hans-Hugo Wurst, who will present the report of the chair of the IASB.
Yes, thank you, Michel. I am happy to report that we continue to make progress on many fronts. On the 28th of May, we were able to publish an exposure draft of a revised conceptual framework. I believe when you read the whole document that everybody will agree, even if you don't agree with all of the substance, that it's very well written, it's fluently written, and it's also very concise. And it is also a very honest document, I believe, there where we don't have a clear answer to a very complicated accounting question, such as how would we precisely define other comprehensive income. Many have tried it over the years, and we simply say, well, we cannot come up with a precise definition, but we have nevertheless formulated some very good and strong principles. The conceptual framework makes very clear that we acknowledge that profit or loss is the main performance indicator for a entity, for a company in the time period. In the past, we were not quite clear what we felt was the main performance indicator. We basically told people to look at the complete comprehensive income statement, and now we say, well, we acknowledge that markets look primarily at earnings as defined in profit or loss. So that's what we see as the main performance indicator, not the only one, but the main one. That at the same time means that you have to be very careful to place elements of income outside profit or loss, usually the case in or other comprehensive income. So we say there should be a high hurdle for OCI once you decide that you take earnings, profit or loss, very seriously. We have also said that in principle, all elements from OCI should at a certain point be recycled into profit or loss. We also make a very clear choice, and I think with agreement of most of the world, for continuation of the mixed measurement model. We do not express a preference for either historical cost or for current measurement basis. We say in some cases you need historic cost, and in other cases, let's say insurance, current measurement is much more appropriate. And that really depends on either the nature of business activities. If you use an asset in combination with other assets to produce goods or services, and you do not plan to sell those assets, such as property, plant and equipment, on the market, you will plan to sell your goods or services on the market, not the equipment that you make them with, then historic cost is probably the best solution. Do you sell an asset or a liability on an active market where instruments are being traded, then probably current measurement is the best answer. I think with the measurement chapter, we really give a little bit more direction than has been the case in the old conceptual framework. We have also reintroduced a reference to the term prudence. We did away with that in the last version of the conceptual framework, because we felt it was being misunderstood by many people. So we have made very, and as a result of us removing that term, many people got the impression that our board was not interested in prudent accounting, which of course we are, because prudence is basically our middle name. So what we decided to do is to reintroduce the term prudence, but to make very clear that prudence does not mean that we are looking for a systemic a systematic bias towards conservatism in accounting, because a conservative bias in accounting that sounds very prudent, but usually it leads to the creation of hidden reserves, which are then being released over time when a company is doing less well, and then it's going to be used to cover up worsening performance. So then prudence turns into imprudence, and we say no, we want to get, we want prepare us to give an accurate, neutral picture, but to achieve that, you should also not overstate your assets and not understate your liabilities. So if there are conditions of uncertainty, you have to exercise caution. And this exercise of caution is what we call prudence, but it should be not in place of neutrality, it should be serving neutrality. It should be should lead to neutral outcomes. In the fourth quarter of this year, we will publish our LISA standard. The staff is very busy writing the standard. All the decisions have been taken. And we will also publish a state-of-the-art effect analysis according to our new handbook on this issue. And we have already noticed, we have already pre-published elements of this effect analysis in short documents, which have been extremely well received by the markets and have really improved the understanding of the standard. So we really believe that producing a good effect analysis also helps the markets accept the standard much better. The disclosure initiative, we started it in July 2013, and we continue to make good progress. We have already done quite a bit. We have introduced changes to IAS 1, which make very clear to preparers that they can use their, or they should really use more of their judgment in deciding when to publish disclosure disclosures, only when they are material and when they're not material, please don't do it, and don't tick the boxes. We have also recently produced an exposure draft which are aimed to improve disclosures around financing, and we've got two products upcoming, the first of which is an exposure draft on a practice statement which contains guidance on how to apply the materiality concept, and I think that will be welcomed by the preparer community. And finally, we will issue this year a discussion paper on the principles of disclosure, so that we hopefully in the future the board, when deciding on disclosures per standard, will do that in a homogeneous way across standards. Then finally, some words on the insurance project. We're still working very hard on this. Next week, the board is going to take a couple of important decisions on participating contracts. And we still have some time to go. We will probably need the rest of the year to finalize all decision making. That means that we're going to start writing the standard, or not start, we have already done a lot, but continue writing the standard in the beginning of next year, and that means that the standard will not be issued in 2015, and that also means that the effective date will not be exactly the same one as that of IFRS 9 financial instruments, which is very important for many insurers as well, for all insurers as well. Especially European insurers have come to us, they have also come to IFREC to say, well, that poses quite a few problems for us in terms of work, in terms of possible accounting mismatches. So please look at possibilities of perhaps endorsing or perhaps postponing the effective date of IFRS 9 for insurance companies or insurance activities. We are going to discuss possibilities of doing so in the board meeting next week. The staff has written a couple of very good papers which make clear that this is not a simple thing to do. and that almost all possible solutions have serious drawbacks. So this is something that we really have to look at very seriously. I think it's also important to note that we get very strong signals from the regulatory community who say, listen, IFRS 9 is an absolute must, and we don't want to run the risk that it gets endorsed at a later or that the effective date will get postponed. We urgently need the improvement of expected loss model. Many regulators, including insurance regulators, are not convinced that the problems that the insurance companies would face because of these two different effective dates are all that bad. So we really have to weigh all the arguments, we have to look at all the technical issues, and in the end, I'm sure we will come to a considered and well-balanced decision. This completes my statement for this meeting.
Thank you, Hans. Any questions on this report? Okay, I see none. Then we will move to the DPOC, the Due Process Oversight Committee, which is now chaired by